Welcome to Doc's Opinion Audio, where medicine is explored not just by the numbers, but by the stories we live and the questions we dare to ask. In this episode, I'll read to you an essay titled, The Echo Chamber of Cardiology, Practicing Medicine, or Managing Metrics. It's a reflection on what happens when clinical care becomes an algorithm, when checkboxes replace conversation, and when the art of medicine is slowly drowned out by the noise of its own measurements. You'll hear about patients, patterns, and the quiet erosion of presence in modern care. But you'll also hear something else, a call to return. I'm Dr. Axel F. Sigurdsson. Thank you for listening, and for thinking critically with me. The ballroom was cold in that sterile, calculated way, air conditioning cranked just high enough to keep anyone from dozing off. Still, two rows in, a man in a navy blazer blinked slowly, arms crossed. The telltale nod of jet-lagged surrender already beginning. The projector whirred like a tired breath. The smell of burnt espresso drifted in from the hallway. Someone coughed. Phones buzzed on silent. On stage, the panelists sat in crisp formation. Five experts, four logos, three institutional affiliations apiece. One click of the remote. LDLC target, 70. Silence. Then nods. Another click. Very high risk. Consider 55. More nods. Pen scratched, a sleeve adjusted, no questions. There was a rhythm to it, clinical, efficient, hypnotic. The lights dimmed just enough to make the PowerPoint glow. The moderator smiled without smiling. Everyone already knew what came next. Behind them, sponsors leaned against the walls with folded arms, practicing neutrality. The front row was packed with gray-haired faculty and rising fellows, coats draped over chairs, faces glowing in the reflected blue light of updated guidelines. No one interrupted. No one challenged. Why would they? The science was settled. The targets, precise. The language, class 1, level A, offered certainty, authority, protection. And yet, beneath the low hum of projectors and filtered air, something felt off. Like a simulation of medicine, running on repeat. A low clinical murmur, the sound of an echo chamber. Outside, patients were asking different questions. My LDL is high, but my calcium score is 0. Am I really at risk? My blood pressure is 132. Do I need another pill? Do all 6 of these meds help, or are they just wearing me down? Inside, those voices didn't exist. They weren't on the slides, weren't in the citations, weren't invited. Here, cardiology was clean. Disease was linear. Risk lived inside equations. Prevention came in pills. No need to think. Just follow the flowchart. There were no villains in the ballroom, just familiarity, comfort, and the slow drift of medicine into echo. What began as evidence had become doctrine, what was once guidance had become law, and what passed for progress was often the same ideas, moving in circles, polished, endorsed, and sponsored. The air smelled of espresso and industry funding, and no one seemed to notice. The rise of consensus without question. It didn't happen all at once. There was no sharp turn. No single guideline or calculator that broke the system. The walls rose quietly, slide by slide, recommendation by recommendation. At first, it felt like clarity. The field aligned. Pathways got cleaner. If you followed them, you were practicing evidence-based medicine. If not, you'd better have a reason. They offered safety, clinical, legal, psychological. You could lean on them when the patient made you nervous, reference them when uncertain, feel protected, even when unsure. And no one noticed how small the room was becoming. The same names on the papers, the same experts on the panels. The trials fed the guidelines fed the talks reinforced the trials. Everything reinforced everything else. What's the LDL target? What's the ASCVD score? What's the A1C threshold? Still clinical, but no longer curious. Judgment became protocol and checklists, and the checklist became doctrine. Over time, the burden of thinking shifted. You didn't need to ask what the patient needed. You just followed the pathway. When something didn't fit, you hesitated, then clicked anyway. The guidelines weren't the problem. The problem was how they became untouchable. Deviation felt dangerous, skepticism, disloyal. Disagreement made you look out of step. So we stopped questioning, stopped challenging, stopped noticing what wasn't being said. Inside those walls, the field grew quiet. That's how medicine gets stuck. Not from bad actors. But from good intentions, endlessly repeated until no one remembers how to question them. Medical practice is an art, not a trade, a calling, not a business, a calling in which your heart will be exercised equally with your head. Bernard Laun. the illusion of control. She wasn't sick, not really. She hadn't felt unwell. She still chased the bus when running late, still graded papers at night without thinking twice. Her body felt like hers, unremarkable, reliable. She was 52, walked daily, taught math, borderline cholesterol, borderline blood pressure, no diabetes, no symptoms. But her ASCVD score came back, 7.6%. Just over the line. No one explained the number, no discussion of absolute risk, no calcium score. Just start the statin. She nodded, left with a prescription, and quietly crossed a threshold, from person to patient. We've grown fluent in the language of numbers. LDL, EF, SBP, BMI. A glance at the chart tells us what to think, and over time we've stopped thinking past it. Her LDL-C became a verdict. Under 100, reassure. Over 160, prescribe. Her blood pressure climbed a little. 138, 142. A new drug was added. She came in for follow-up a year later. Statin, check. BP med, check. GLP-1 added 3 months ago. She'd lost weight. Labs improved. The dashboard was green, top to bottom. Her 10-year risk, down to 5.2%. Everything was in range, except her life. She wasn't smiling. I feel off, she said. Like I'm not myself anymore. She moved slower, forgot small things. Sometimes she felt short of breath, just walking to the car. She felt older than her age, drained in a way that didn't show up on labs, and unsure anyone really wanted to hear it. I paused. The meds were right. The numbers proved it. The checklist was complete. She had an echo. Her ejection fraction came back at 53%. Normal, reassuring, within range. So the fatigue, probably stress. The shortness of breath, maybe deconditioning. Nothing cardiac. We told her the heart was fine because the EF was fine. But EF doesn't feel fatigue. It gives us a number and the illusion that we've understood something. This is what happens when we confuse surrogates for outcomes. When we mistake measurability for meaning, we normalize LDL and assume risk has fallen. We hit BP targets and call it prevention, whether or not the patient feels better. We chase numbers until they look right and forget to ask if the body agrees. These aren't decisions, they're reflexes. Useful, defensible, but not always right. There was a time when medicine left room for uncertainty, room to pause before prescribing based on a score. Now we treat the number. Document the compliance, check the box, and move on. The reward? A clean chart, a silent nod from the system. But did we help her? From guidance to governance. Guidelines were meant to help. They started as a map, evidence distilled into direction, a way to standardize care, reduce errors, and align decisions with data. But somewhere along the way, the map became the terrain. We stopped navigating. We started obeying. And when the map doesn't match the patient, we adjust the patient, not the map. We add the statin because the ASCVD score says so. We escalate meds because the BP is 142. We start another drug because the A1C crosses a line. Each decision justified. Each number addressed. The chart looks good. But the patient doesn't feel good, and the system doesn't notice, because the metrics were met. We like to imagine guidelines as the work of a modern-day Socratic council, physicians in careful dialogue, weighing evidence, refining the truth. But in reality, most are assembled over email, track changes, margin comments, a shared Google Doc, a Zoom call, a soft deadline, a new trial slotted in, a sentence softened. Some members show up, others don't. The document moves forward, slowly. By the time a recommendation appears in print, it's already being cited. By the time it's revised, it's already protocol. Committees are made up of familiar names, senior academics, subspecialists, institutional lifers. Professional societies appoint them. Some rotate, others cycle from panel to panel. Conflicts of interest? Disclosed, but rarely disqualifying. The structure rewards stability over dissent. And once a recommendation makes it in, it's hard to take it out. It gets embedded, referenced, coded, taught, reimbursed. Guidelines pile up like sediment, easy to add to, hard to revise, almost impossible to remove. It's not conspiracy, it's inertia, it's workflow. Still, what comes out the other side behaves like law. Recommendations become calculators. Calculators shape treatment. Treatment becomes audit. audit becomes performance, and performance becomes medicine. For the physician, guidelines offer something else, protection. I followed the guidelines. Not, I thought critically, not I knew the patient. So even when the patient falls, or fades, or says, I don't feel like myself, we point to the checklist and say, but I did everything right. That's the paradox. The science may be sound, but the structure we've built around it is not neutral. It selects, it simplifies, it rewards alignment. It punishes hesitation, and the more faithfully we follow it, the harder it becomes to question. Until even the most thoughtful physicians are practicing inside a loop that no longer needs them to think, medicine starts to obey itself. But what if we're following the wrong map? Evidence-based medicine is not cookbook medicine. It requires integration of best evidence with clinical expertise and patient values, David Sackett. When guidelines are followed, and still we fail. Frank took everything we asked him to. ACE inhibitor, beta blocker, mineralocorticoid antagonist, loop diuretic, aspirin, atorvastatin. A daily SGLT2 inhibitor, added after the latest guidelines came out. He was 81, thin, walked with a cane, lived with his wife, still drove, still attended the garden on his best days, still read the paper every morning. His ejection fraction was 35%, his blood pressure 112 over 64. The chart said, heart failure, well controlled. The protocol said, goal achieved. He fell in the bathroom on a Tuesday morning, dehydrated, acute kidney injury, heart rate in the 40s, a hip fracture. 3 weeks later, he was gone. We didn't overtreat Frank. We just followed the evidence. Every medication was guideline directed, every dose backed by a trial. He was on all the right drugs for all the right reasons at all the right targets, and it didn't save him. There's a cost to precision, a cost in dizziness, in renal decline, in fatigue, in falls that start as numbers and end as funerals. We escalate, we titrate, we hit the target, but somewhere along the way, we stop noticing that the patient is disappearing. It happens with hypertension, too. We chase 130 like it's salvation, add a third drug, then a fourth, SGLT2 for the kidneys, thiazide for the numbers, the pressure falls, the creatinine rises, the patient grows tired, lightheaded, slow. We document, goal achieved, then code the fall. These aren't mistakes. They're what happens when the machine runs exactly as designed. And somewhere in that loop, the patient becomes a side effect. Not because we didn't care, not because we weren't paying attention, but because we were paying attention to the wrong things. We followed the rules, we hit the targets, and we harmed the patient. We optimized the chart, but we overlooked the human being behind it. Maybe it's time we stop obeying the machine, time to pause, to look up, to remember what medicine was meant to be. Not protocol, not performance, but care. Breaking the echo. It starts with hesitation. Not rebellion. Not defiance. Just a pause. A breath before you click prescribe, before you follow the protocol by reflex. You pause, you look up, and you remember there's a person in the room. Not a risk score. Not a performance measure. Not a case to be managed. A person with complexity, contradiction, history, and hope. None of which the algorithm sees. It doesn't mean abandoning the guidelines. It means putting them back in their place. They're tools, not truths. They guide, they don't command. You begin asking different questions. Not does this patient meet criteria, but will this treatment help or hurt? Not am I following the guideline, but am I practicing medicine or just managing risk? There's no chart field for judgment, no billing code for intuition, no checkbox for you actually gave a damn. The system doesn't reward presence. It doesn't recognize empathy. It can't measure trust. But patients feel it every time we show up or don't. That's where the medicine lives. It lives in the moment you say to a patient, I'm not here to treat your numbers. That's what the algorithm does. I'm here to treat you. Breaking the echo doesn't mean rejecting the science. It means remembering why it was built. We are trained for more than this. We are trusted for more than this. And if we're willing to stop, even briefly, we might remember why we entered the room in the first place. The longer I practiced medicine, the more I realized that the most important thing I could offer wasn't a treatment, it was attention. Bernard Lown. The chamber echoes because we keep applauding ourselves. Maybe it's time to stop clapping and start listening.